Last week, we saw the big decision at the Blunden Paper Company. No more newsprint. Instead, it was now going to be all groundwood paper. And the market that the company was zeroing in on was that of magazine publishers. And they certainly did well as they got started. Look Magazine, boy, that's right up there with Saturday Evening Post, who was one of their major customers. Also, Better Homes and Gardens and Esquire. And right from the beginning, the paper company was going to make the highest grade of this low-grade paper that was possible and intended to be good competitors in the market. Well, this brought many, many changes to both the paper company itself and to the employees. Let's take a look at what happens here as they have to make this big switch. If Reverend Noah Lathrop, he's the minister who had wonderingly toured the mill in 1902 and took us along on that jaunt, if he could have returned to witness the operation after the conversion to production of groundwood papers 45 years later, he would have found the basic procedures familiar, but he would also have been astonished at the numerous refinements and complexities that had been added to an already complex process. Groundwood paper production required very careful selection of purchased wood. Even small amounts of inferior wood could not be accepted for top quality magazine paper. Only the soundest and brightest would do. The woodyard had expanded considerably and added 1.5 miles of railroad track. The company could store 20 to 23,000 cords of wood in the yard. That's some big piles of wood. And could keep an additional amount in the river as well. Two 15-ton cranes, soon to be replaced by a large diesel-electric model, moved the wood as necessary. Spruce, with its long fibers and easy storage, it didn't darken as quickly as other species, was still the most sought-after wood, although the new papers permitted the use of some balsam and even some poplar. 1 year's operation of the mill required about 20,000 cords of spruce, 8,000 of balsam, and 3,000 of poplar, and all of that purchased for about $500,000. Once cut and debarked, the wood was inspected more closely than in newsprint days to eliminate any patches of dry rot or specks of bark that would detract from the finished sheet. More efficient four-pocket grinders with three pockets operating while the fourth was loaded increased the pulp-making capacity of the plant. Electric motors drove most of those grinders, but a few were still dependent on water power. The really big change that affected so many of the mill workers and demanded so much time and attention, continued and thorough testing at all manufacturing stages was a vital part of the mill operation. The procedures began with the pulp and continued until the sheet was off the machine and ready to be shipped. Pit density, the amount of fiber in the mixture of pulp and water beneath the grindstones, was carefully checked and maintained at a constant rate. The freeness test, the major control used during the grinding process, measured the rate at which water drained from the pulp. Free pulp drains quickly, slow pulp more gradually. Free pulp contains coarser fibers and fewer fines. Slow pulp contains more fine fibers and fibers with frayed ends, although the precise nature of the pulp may vary because of infinitely possible fiber combinations, slower pulp generally provides a more uniform, stronger, and better finished sheet. The more complex but less frequently used fiber classification test determined the nature of pulp by passing it through a series of ever finer screens, separating the fibers by size. Still another test involved making and drying a small piece of paper from a sample of pulp. The sample was then tested for strength and examined for cleanliness and brightness, providing a precise idea of the sheet that could be expected. All of these tests were a far change from the day when the papermakers in Grand Rapids relied on visual inspection and an occasionally dipped finger. But despite such detached analytical procedures, the skill of the papermaker was still of importance, as exemplified by the frequently used blue glass test, in which a bit of dilute pulp was placed on blue glass for examination with a strong light. The nature of the mixture of coarse and fine fibers and the general quality of the pulp was judged on the basis of the knowledge and experience of the papermaker. Not all of the artistry had been removed from papermaking. The testing staff also checked purchase supplies, sulfite pulp, and the more recently available craft pulp, a longer fibered product that added strength to the sheet, arrived dry in bales, mostly from the West Coast. The laboratory assessed samples for fiber length, brightness, cleanliness, and freeness. Clay filler, delivered loose in boxcars and hauled to a storage area by wheelbarrow, was checked for moisture content, brightness, and grit. Shipments of alum, chemicals, and various other ingredients were regularly tested for purity. The Blend and Paper Company allowed no deviations in quality due to carelessness by its suppliers. The final stages of pulp production relied on a far more elaborate screening and refining process than had been needed for the manufacture of newsprint. The company installed new Jordan mixers and other high-speed refining equipment to meet groundwood paper specification. The plant made use of two separate systems, one for each of the machines, so that different grades of paper could be manufactured simultaneously. Should the need arise to combine the two stocks, cross connections were available at several points. Both of the Fourdrinieres were carefully maintained, rebuilt when needed, and improved to keep abreast with the latest technology. Testers took samples as the pulp flowed to the wire to form the sheet that continued through the presses and dryers. The paper was analyzed to meet customer demands for smoothness, thickness, opacity, tensile and tearing strength, moisture content and sizing. Yeah, lots and lots of testing. The addition of a bleaching plant and a super calendar helped keep the Blandin name synonymous with quality in the groundwood paper market of the 1940s. Bleaching the groundwood pulp resulted in brighter and whiter paper, and this soon became necessary to remain competitive in the groundwood market. The method selected for the mill in Grand Rapids was a high-density continuous retention tower system, which required the installation of the single largest piece of equipment in the plant. Workers fed thickened pulp mixed with bleaching chemicals and sulfuric acid into the top of the tower. After it had passed slowly downward, the pulp was removed and treated further and had become noticeably brighter. The bleaching equipment added new chemical hazards for the working force at the mill, and the daily use of appropriate safety measures was strictly enforced. The regular calendar, the series of iron rolls that gave the sheet the final smoothing as it left the machine, formed an intrinsic part of the paper machine operation. The new super calendar was a separate unit with a vertical stack of alternating iron rolls and composition rolls. After the paper had rested for a day or so, it was passed through the super calendar for a final processing. The more resilient composition rolls forced the paper against the iron rolls, subjecting it to friction that produced a polishing effect and resulted in additional gloss and smoothness. Earlier groundwood papers could easily be distinguished from the finer book and printing papers that were made entirely from expensive chemical pulp. With the use of bleached pulp in the super calendar, the visual differences were no longer so easily noted, even though the new, still comparatively low-cost groundwood paper was inferior to book paper in many ways. The magazine publishers were quite satisfied with it. Because of the cost of transporting coal to a remote location, Charles Blandin had always emphasized investment in the most modern equipment to produce electricity. Maintaining that tradition in the 1940s, the mill installed a sophisticated new steam-powered turbine generator. The mill's requirements for power had increased considerably, and with both paper machines running at capacity, the demand for power was at an all-time high. power engineer George Galt calculated in 1947 that the electricity consumed in the mill was comparable to that supplying a city of 25 to 30,000 people. The Blandin Paper Company paid more for power than most other mills, but its efficient operation and sophisticated equipment kept the costs as low as possible. The 1940s also saw the beginnings of automation and increased reliance on instrumentation in the mill. Temperature controllers and some of the pocket grinders automatically adjusted the water shower volume that maintained correct temperatures so the pulp would not char or the stones overheat. Instruments to measure, and in some cases to record or regulate, pressures, liquid levels, and temperatures were utilized at almost every stage of the papermaking process. In the beater room, instruments controlled the entire process. The time switches and pressure valves could be easily adjusted as necessary. A large panel of gauges and controls provided information for operating the power plant, eliminating many of the unpleasant labor conditions of earlier years. And looking at a picture of that panel, very good-sized one. Yes, all kinds of knobs to turn, buttons to push, and screens to read. Big change from the previous years. The Blondin Paper Company flourished in the 1940s. Employees and citizens of Grand Rapids alike continued to take great pride in the well-maintained, clean, and modern mill set amidst groomed lawns and beautiful gardens. With satisfaction, the new assistant manager told mill employees in 1947 that the physical condition and finances of the company were sound and that the quality of the finished product held up well with that of competitors from anywhere in the country. "The future of the company and all of us as individuals are secure," he said.